So we are holding on Mem Vav Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud, 18 lines from the bottom. The line begins right up Shimon. We learned yesterday a bunch of rules as far as Psak Halacha, when we have a Machlokas Tanoim, who we pass in life. We said, for example, if we have a Machlokas Rabbi Akiva against one other Tana, then the Halacha is like him. We had, is the Halacha like Rabbi Yossi only against individual Tanoim, such as Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda, or is it even against, or is it even against the Rabbim? What about Reb Meir versus Reb Yehuda? What about Reb Shimon versus Reb Yossi, or Reb Shimon versus Reb Meir, etc.? So we had all these rules. Amar Reb Mesharshi Alesnu Lahani Klali. However, Reb Mesharshi says these rules are not correct. It's not just a blanket thing that always, for example, when you have a machloek, this Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, you always go according to Reb Yehuda. You have to see in each particular case what the svara is. Is Reb Meir's svara or Reb Yehuda's svara more likely? And then, and so forth with all the other ones. So the Gemara says, "Menalei Mesharshi Yaha." Where does the Mesharshi get that from? That there should that these rules shouldn't be in effect, and that you should, and that each one you do on a case by case basis. And now we're going to go through. The Gemara is going to go through a whole bunch of different cases where we see that there's a psak like there's a psak like one of these tanoim against the usual rules, or where we see that there has to be a psak like him, even though the usual rules would tell us to paskin like them anyway. And we're going to go through them one by one. So, you're going to say it's based on, like this, we learned in our Mishnah, Reb Shimon Omer L'maha Dover Domer, we had a case in our Mishnah where you have three people, each of whom has a mini tchum of only four amos, because we said, let's say none of them were Kona Shvisa before Shabbos, for one reason, or let's say all of them went outside the tchum. So all of them now only have four amos. So we said you can have a case where you have three of them, where the third one overlaps with the other two, but so you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven and Shimon don't overlap with each other, but Levi overlaps with both of them. So we said Levi is allowed to eat in the common area with Reuven. Then he and Reuven are allowed to have a picnic in their common area. He and Shimon are allowed to have a picnic in their common area, but Reuven and Shimon are not, because they don't have anything in common. And Reb Shimon had said, Lama Dover Doma, what is that like? The Gimel Chatzeres Apsuchas Zulazu or Psuchas Lushos Rabim. It's similar to a case where you have three Chatzeres, which each one has an entrance into the other one. So each one, you can walk from any one of them to the one next to it without going through Lushos Rabim. And also Psuchas Lushos Rabim. Each one also has its own entrance, its own exit to Lushos Rabim. So we said, if each of the two middle ones makes an Eid of Chatzeres with the middle one, they didn't all three make an Eid of Chatzeres together, but they made. The one on this side made an Eid of Chatzeres with the middle one. The one on this side also did. So we said the same thing. People from the middle Chatzer are allowed to carry to each of the outer Chatzeres because they made an Eid with it. They're each allowed to carry to it, or Shtaima Chatzonis Asura Zunzu, but you're not allowed to carry from one of the outer Chatzeros to the other one by way of the middle Chatzer, because they didn't make an Eruv between them. So it's a similar kind of thing. We talked about this the other day in the Mishnah, right? The Omer of Chama Baguria, Omer Rab, Halacha Kerub Shimon. And we see that Rab Chama Baguria says in the name of Rab that the Halacha is in fact like Rab Shimon. That this would be the case, in this scenario with the Chatzeres, that it would in fact be the case that each of the two middle ones are allowed to carry back and forth to the middle one and vice versa, but the two outer ones are not. And Uman Poligalei Reb Yehuda. Now, who is arguing with Reb Shimon? When Reb Shimon is saying that, we have to assume that somebody is arguing with him on it. Otherwise, there's no reason to mention the Tana's name Bechlal. The Mishnah could have just said, Stam, Lamar Dover Doma. So evidently, there's a Machlokes. Who would that be who's arguing with him? Must be Reb Yehuda. Rashi says for two reasons. Number one, generally, when we have a Machlokes of Reb Shimon with somebody, generally, it's Reb Yehuda. And second of all, Rashi says, another Lashon is, because earlier in the Mishnah, you had something that Rabbi Huda had said. We had the question when we say that a person has only, in a certain cases where a person has only four amas, for example, again, when he went outside the tomb, we said, in which direction are the four amas? So we said, Rabbi Eliezer had said that you have he's in the middle and then he has two amas on each side. And Rabbi Hodad said he's allowed to pick four amos in any one direction, and then we continued with the scenario where you have two people next to each other, let's say within six amos of each other, so they overlap by two amos, or then we have the case of the three people. So therefore, so Rashi says in the second Lashon, all of that is a continuation of what Rabbi Hodad is saying. So now if Rabbi Shimon is speaking up, then it means that Rabbi Shimon is disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. It means that Rabbi Yehuda would say, so in other words, Rabbi Shimon would be saying to Rabbi Yehuda, look, in the case of the three chatzeres, you would agree with me, no? So why is it in the case with the three people, each of whom has only four amas, you're disagreeing with me? And that's why Rabbi Shimon has to mention the analogy. So that would show, in other words, Rashi says in the second Lashon, that would show that Rabbi Yehuda in fact disagrees with Rabbi Shimon's din about the three people. He agrees about the din with the three chatzeres, but he disagrees about the din with the three people. Right. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you pick four amos in any one direction, and then once you've picked that, then that becomes your four amos for the rest of that Travis, and yeah, you have zero in the other direction, right? No, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon were chaverim. But yeah. Anyway, so the point is, so v'ha'amr to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Allah to Rabbi Yehuda. We said before one of the rules that we said Rabbi Yochanan had laid down is when you have a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Elalav shmamin olasnehu. So we can say that maybe that's where Rabbi Sharshia gets from, that we see that these rules don't exist. Because you see, here's a case where even though the rules would tell us to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, here Rav is telling us to paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, "Umay kosha." Now, why is that a question? Why would that force Rav Mesharshia to say that the rules don't exist? Bechlal, Dilma hecha de itmar itmar hecha de lo itmar. Maybe it's not the rules are not an absolute thing. You must always go according to these rules. Sometimes you have exceptions. Sometimes you have an exception where an amora will tell us that the halacha is like a certain manda amar against the rules. The rules are meant as defaults, basically. In other words, sometimes you'll have that. Sometimes you'll have for one reason or another, the halacha is paskin against these usual rules. These usual rules are just meant as a default in case you don't have a particular reason to choose one tana svara over the other, then you go according to the rules. So not necessarily does that show the rules don't exist bechlal. Now, the Gemara could also answer that Rav is arguing with Rabbi Yochanan, and the Gemara is going to use that answer later when we have no choice. But at this point, the Gemara would rather be able to say that everybody agrees with the rules. And just every rule has exceptions. So far we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan, we originally quoted the rules in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. That was in the Gemara earlier on the Amud, which we learned yesterday. Now Rabbi Mesharshia is arguing that not on the basis of something that Rav said. So we could easily answer, okay, look, Rav has his opinion, Rabbi Yochanan has his. They're both Amoroyim. They can argue with each other. The Gemara would prefer not to have to do that until we have no choice. Okay. So, Elameha. No, rather maybe we can say that Mesharshia is getting it from the following. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, in the next Perek, Ir shol yochid v'nasis shol rabim. If you have a city that used to be a city of a yochid, and now it became a city of rabim. So Rashi explains like this. Remember, Rashi's shitta is that for a street to be a rishos rabim, besides that it has to be 16 amos wide and not roofed, etc. Rashi famously holds that it also has to have 600,000 people going through it every day, or does that mean there were 600,000 people living in the city, or that there were actually 600,000 people walking through the street every day? Anyway, what happens if you have a city that used to be of Yochid? Rashi explains means that it didn't used to have 600,000 people in it. The Nasis Sharabim, and now the population grew, and now it has 600,000. Obviously cities usually grow. The din is, the Mishnah says, Ma'arvin Eskola. You're able, if you want to make an Eruv for the city, you're able to make for the entire city, you don't have to leave any houses out of it. We're going to learn in the next Perek that there are certain cases, if you're going to be making a city-wide Eruv, as the Mishnah is going to continue, as we're going to quote over here, sometimes you have to leave some houses or some part of the city out of the Eruv. Because we're going to discuss in the Gemara over there, Rashi explains over here, it's a heker. It's a heker to remind us that people should remember that there is a concept of Rosh Hashanah Abim. After all, a real Rosh Hashanah Abim, you can't just make an Eruv around. Other Rishonim anyway explain Shal Yochid and Shal Rabim differently. They understand that Shal Yochid means the city is actually the personal possession of one person. You had sometimes like that in those days. You had a city that belonged to one particular paritz, for example, or whatever, versus Shal Rabim, where it just belongs to the public, like cities nowadays. In the Chassidish Maisis, you have a lot of times where a certain city belongs to a paritz. You have stories in Midrashim about that also. You have a story, for example, where Reb Taufan one time asks Reb Akiva to go buy him a certain city, and then Reb Akiva goes and gives the money to Tzedakah. It's a story in Medrash Rabbah. The gist of it is that Rabbi Akiva, who at that time was a Talmud or a Talmud Chava or whatever of Reb Taufan, felt that Reb Taufan wasn't giving tzedakah enough as he should compared to the amount of wealth he has. So when Reb Taufan told him to go buy the city, he went and gave out the money to poor Talmud Chachamim. Later on, Reb Taufan asked him, "Let me see the city that you bought me." Rabbi Akiva takes him and shows him a post. And shows him a pasuk. I don't remember which pasuk, but there's a pasuk that expresses the idea about supporting Talmud Chacham. And Rabbi Taufan was actually very happy with it. He realized, you know what, Rabbi Akiva found a very nice way to tell me that I wasn't doing right. And he said, good, I'm going to give you even more money to give out to tzedakah like this. I'm going to appoint you administrator Anyway. The point is sometimes, so again, so Rashi over here learns that Shal Yochid v'Nasas Shal Rabim means a city that used to have less than 600,000 people. Now it has 600,000. So therefore, the din is that Ma'ar v'Nas Kula, you're still able to make an Eruv in the whole thing. You don't have to leave any part of the city out as a heker. According to all the other Rishonim, Shal Yochid v'Nasas Shal Rabim means it used to belong to an individual and now it belongs to the Rabim. Anyway. So then you're allowed to ma'ariv in a skola, but shol rabim benasa shol yochid. If it's the other way around, it used to be a city of rabim, and now it's a city of yochid. According to Rashi, it used to have 600,000. Now it has less. People are moving out, you know, high crime rates or whatever. Or according to everybody else, it used to belong to the rabim, and then they sold it to one yochid, let's say. So then, ein ma'ariv in a skola. So the Mishnah says you can't make an eruv in the entire city. You have to leave some part of the city out as a heker. Of that there's a concept of Rosh Hashanah Abim, and that people shouldn't forget about the concept of carrying on Shabbos at all, which, by the way, you know, we know that nowadays when you have community Eruv, and sometimes it happens in some places, people grow up in these places not even knowing there's a concept of not being able to carry on Shabbos. And so, you know, you see by 770, for example, they have these gigantic signs by the doors over there, be aware there's no Eruv in the community, you can't carry, because people come to 770 from all over the place. They come from many little towns in your Shalayim and many other towns and cities in Eretz Yisrael that have Eruv, and they're not used to the concept. Anyway, you have to leave some part of the city outside the Eruv, and how much does that have to be? It has to be at least the size of the city Chadosha that was in the territory of Yehuda in Eretz Yisrael, which had 50 people living in it. So you have to leave an area of the city that has 50 people living in it out of the Eruv. It was a new city, but that was the actual name of the city, Chadosha. In Sefer Yehoshua, where it lists all the cities in the Nachla of Shevet Yehuda, it lists over there Tznon v'Chadosha or Migdal God. So yeah, it was an actual place called Chadosha. Well, that's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Reb Shimon says you don't need quite that much. Sholosh chatzeres, shol shnei batim. All you need is three chatzeres of two houses each, so a total of six houses. And again, v'omer of chama baguria omer rav halacha k'Reb Shimon. And uman poligalei Reb Yehuda. Again, who is arguing with Reb Shimon? Here we see clearly in the Mishnah, it's Reb Yehuda. V'ha'amret Reb Yehuda v'Reb Shimon halacha k'Reb Yehuda. Again, according to the rules that we quoted before from Reb Yechanan, the halacha should have been like Reb Yehuda. And here Rav is telling us the halacha is like Reb Shimon. Maybe that leads Reb Meshavshiyah to say that the rules don't exist. Again, the Gemara says, "My kusha, why is that such a problem?" Again, "Duma hachaname heichad itma itma heichad lo itma lo itma." Again, maybe you could say where it's said explicitly one way, then it's one way. Otherwise, by default, the halacha would indeed be like Rabbi Yehuda. But the Amoraim are able to pass in an individual case separately. Now, why are we bringing each one of these things and giving the same answer? So the Ritva gives a couple of possibilities. One of them is that each one of these was brought up in a different Beis Medrash, and then when Ravina and Rav Ashi collected together the Gemara, they collected together all these different ones and put them one after the other. Another possibility is the Gemara is thinking, okay, maybe if you have one exception, okay, but you have two, three, we're going to see how many exceptions you have, maybe already, you know, enough exceptions, apparently you don't have a rule at all, and the Gemara is going to say it's still not necessarily. Another point, actually, Marsha brings up is, why don't we say, look, I mean, we said before, halacha kedivrei hamekel be'eruv, maybe we're paskening like Reb Shimon in each of these cases, because it's a kula in the dinim of eruv. But the so one answer is because if that's the case, he wouldn't have had to say halacha k'Reb Shimon. He could have just said halacha k'Divrei HaMeikel Be'eruv. Automatically, that tells us the halacha is like Reb Shimon in each of these cases that we mentioned. No, Reb Shimon is the one who's Meikel. If he meant to say that the halacha is like Reb Shimon because of the general rule that we learned yesterday, halacha k'Divrei HaMeikel Be'eruv, then Rav would have phrased it that way, halacha k'Divrei HaMeikel. Instead, he would have said that in these machlokas in halacha k'divrei hamekel, the fact that he has to specify halacha k'divrei Reb Shimon implies it's not because halacha k'divrei hamekel be'eruv. It's in these particular cases I found Reb Shimon's logic to be more compelling, and therefore I'm paskening like him. But this is Rav saying that. So again, the Gemara could have answered that Rav argues with Reb Yechanan. Ravina's not coming in over here. Well, he wrote the Gemara. I mean, he and Rav Ashi eventually composed the Gemara. Fine, but they're just editors. They're just editors. I mean, they have their own voice in the Gemara sometimes also, but not over here. So Rav is the one over here who's saying in each of these cases, Allah put up Shimon. Okay, onward. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'll ask later.
Yeah. Ask later. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Elamehod Tznan, fourth line of Memzayin Amad Aleph on now. So, well, let's say then that maybe we're going to learn Rav Masharshi's point that these rules b'chlal don't exist. We have another Mishnah in connection with Eruvin later in our Masechta. Hamaniach is based. Now we have like this. Later on, we're going to learn, and we're going to learn in more detail in the sixth and seventh parak of our Masechta, the dinim of Eruvei Chatzeres. In particular, we touched on them before, but in particular, we're going to talk about two concepts. One of them is that if there's a yid who lives in this chatzer and doesn't join in the Eruv Chatzeres, then he's going to ask everybody else to carry in and out of their houses to that chatzer, unless he's mevatel rishus to them. We touched on that at the end of the third parak, but you have another din that if there's a goy living in the chotzer, then you have to do schiras rishus from him. You have to at least symbolically rent the rishus from him, and only then are you able to make an eruv chatzeres and carry there. You have nowadays, for example, people live in apartment buildings. They arrange it with the super. We had, you know, on my block where they made an outdoor shul partly in the street. So the rabbanim before Rosh Hashanah, they arranged with the police for that kind of thing. In general, in places where they have community-wide aid, and that's what they do. They arrange with the mayor's office or the police or whatever in order to... What? Because of the police. Because they have the right to be able to block off streets where necessary, so therefore that gives them a certain bias over the streets. Anyway, whatever. The point is that you have this concept where a yid who doesn't join in the Eruv Chatzeres causes that the chatzer is also for everybody to carry in. Because remember, the whole point of an Eruv Chatzeres is you have to have that the chatzer, in effect, is all belonging to one rishus. And we consider that everybody is living in the house where the food for the Eruv Chatzeres is, and therefore you have the chatzer belongs only to that house in a certain sense, and therefore you're able to carry in it. If you have two or more people still have bialos over the chatzer, then you can't carry in it. And here you have one person didn't join in the Eruv Chatzeres. So, and as far as it goes, we're going to learn later on, the Chachamim made a takana that we don't want, the Chum didn't want to encourage Jews and Goyim to live, didn't want to encourage the, to Jews to live together with Goyim, and therefore they created this thing where you have to do Schiras Rishus, which is a bit of a hassle to do, and therefore the Chachamim figured that might discourage Jews from having Goyim live among them. Anyway. The point is, the Mishnah says, "Hamaniach es beiso." Suppose that a person leaves his house for Shabbos, for holach lishbois ve'ir acheres. He's going to spend Shabbos in some other city. Echad nachri ve'echad yisrael oisul levnei chatzeres divrei meir. whether it was a goy who left or a Jew, he still asses the people of the chotzer, unless he joins in the eruv if he's a Jew, or they do schiras rishos if he's a goy. Give it a mayor. That's what a mayor says. The fact that he's away for Shabbos doesn't matter. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino. He said Rabbi Yehuda says he doesn't asser because he's not there for Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi takes a middle view. Nachri Oser. If he's a goy and he went away for Shabbos, he still assers unless they do schiras rishos. Yisrael Eino Oser. But if he's a Jew, he doesn't asser it for them. In Derech Yisrael, love it Shabbos, because a Jew is usually not going to come on Shabbos, because if he went to spend Shabbos in another city, let's say, how is he going to get back on Shabbos? He can't walk outside the Tchum. He can't walk outside the Tchum. But a goy could travel on Shabbos. And Reb Shimon Omer, afilu hi niach es bay. It's not even, Reb Shimon says, it doesn't even matter. It's not even a question of whether he goes to the same city or a different city. All the previous three Tanoim, we're talking about the Ir Acheres in a different city. Reb Shimon says, never mind another city. Afilu hi niach es beisoi. Even if the person left his house for Shabbos, v'holach lishbeis etzel bitoi ba'oisar ir, he goes to spend Shabbos by his daughter in the same city. The Gemara later on Daf Pei is going to talk about briefly why it mentions his daughter. Why doesn't it mention his son? We'll get to that. But anyway, the point is that Reb Shimon says, einei oisar. He doesn't aser the rest of the people of the chutz, so even though he didn't join in the eruv. Shekvar hi siach daite, because he was masiach das, that he doesn't plan to be back on Shabbos. And again, v'omer avchama b'goya omer rav alocha k'Reb Shimon. So we see, and again, Rab says that alocha is like Reb Shimon. And again, uman poligalei Reb Yehuda. And again, we have a four-way machloikas over here. And one of the opinions against Reb Shimon is Reb Yehuda. V'amet Reb Yehuda v'Reb Shimon alocha k'Reb Yehuda. So then, why are we passing out Reb Shimon? In fact, the Gemara could have pointed out also, I mean, not only that, we have Reb Yossi over here, and we said Reb Yossi wins out usually even against Reb Yehuda. So we see even more so that these rules are not being applied in this case. So again, maybe that leads Reb Meshavashi to say that the rules don't exist. Again, the Gemara says, maybe the same thing. This is an exception to the rule. You have a usual rule. You have a default rule. And then you have exceptions where an amoda, such as Rav, can pass in like a different opinion. Now, rather, we're going to try the following Mishnah. We're going to learn the next Mishnah in our Perek. We're going to talk about, we talked about previously the concept, there's two ways of making an Eruv Tchumen. You can do it, you can put down food, which is the usual way that you do it. You put down food there on Erev Shabbos, and it's still there, Bein HaShemoshes, and you can do that yourself. You can send it with a shliach, whatever. The other way is you can be standing there personally at Bein HaShemoshes of Shabbos. That's called Ma'arev Beraglov. So the Mishnah says, "V'zeu she'omru ha'oni ma'arev beraglov." So this is what we mean. We have a scenario over there where a person is kohen shvisa from a distance because he could reach there before Shabbos, whatever. V'zeu she'omru ha'oni ma'arev beraglov. This is an example of what the Chachamim meant when they said that a poor person can make an eruv on foot. The example over there in the Mishnah is that he was traveling and he didn't have any food with him. So therefore, in that sense, he's considered an oni. He might be rich. He might have plenty of food at home, but right now he doesn't have any with him, and therefore, in effect, he's an oni. So he's able to be ma'arav beraglov. And the Mishnah continues, Rav Meir oimer onu ein lanu ela oni. So Rav Meir says, once with the Chachamim said it applies to an oni, then we can only say that this concept of Erev Beraglov only applies to an oni. We can't say that if a person is at home and he has the option of sending food or taking food for an Erev Tchumen, that he should instead have the option to go walk there and be Kona Shvisa on foot. Rav Meir says nothing to it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, echad oni ve'echad asher. No, when we say oni, it's just a dibru chachamim behoiver. The chachamim are talking about the normal case that it would be an oni who does that. But actually, echad oni ve'echad asher, it would be whether he's poor, whether he's rich, he's able to do an eruv beraglov. Loy omru ma'avin b'pas ela lahokel ala asher. When we say the whole concept that you can make an eruv using bread or other food is only if a kula on the rich person shalo yetsiv ma'arav beraglov. He doesn't have to schlep out there and be ma'arav beraglov. He can send a shliach with the food. And so what happens? Who is the halacha like? Umasni le-Rabchia bar-Ashi le-Chia bar-Rav kamei-de-Rav. Now, Rabchia bar-Ashi was teaching this Mishnah to Chia bar-Rav kamei-de-Rav in front of Rav. We had a few times in our Masechta already. Rav had a son, Chia, and Rabchia bar-Ashi was his Melamed. So we had a few times already in our Masechta, also in Shabbos, where he was teaching something to Chia bar-Rav, and Rav noted to the Melamed, to Rabchia bar-Ashi, what to teach. So he's teaching Chia Barav, Echad Oni ve'Echad Osher. This that was saying that it applies to both an Osher and to both an Oni and an Osher, that they can do Ma'arav Baraglav. Va'omale Rav Sayim Bonami Halacha Kirab Yehuda. And Rav tells him, don't just learn the Mishnah that way. Finish off and tell my son, tell Chia, that the Halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, we have to ask Tauti Lomali. Now, why, if we said that you have the rule that when you have Rav Meir against Rav Yehuda, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, why would he need to repeat over here and have him and have Rav Chia Ba'ashi teach specifically that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda? V'ha'amet, Rav Meir Rav Yehuda, halacha Rav Yehuda. So wouldn't that show that Rav doesn't hold of these rules? Otherwise, he wouldn't have to specify here the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says, my kusha. Okay, but still, why does that force Rav Meshaoshi to say that the rules don't exist at all? Fine, we can't use the answers that we said before, hecha de itmar itmar, hecha de lo itmar lo itmar, because then still, it's something unnecessary for Rav to tell us, because the general rules already would tell us that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. But fine, maybe Dumar Rav Las Lelahani Kali. Maybe Rav doesn't agree with these rules. The rules were said originally in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Okay, maybe Rav disagrees with those rules. That doesn't show the rules don't exist at all. That just shows Rav disagrees with them.
Okay. He just did it, and they based the rules on what he did.
No, well, this is different. We're not saying we're basing the rules on what he's doing or not. We're saying, Rabbi Yehuda. No, we're not. No. Fakir. What we're saying is, Rabbi Yochanan gave these rules that unless otherwise specified, when you have a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, for example, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, Rav wouldn't hold of those rules. Rav would say there's no general rules. It's a case by case basis. So in each of the previous cases where Rav passed him like Rabbi Shimon, now we don't have to say those are exceptions to the rule. Now we can say this because in each of those individual cases, Rav found Rav Shimon's reason more compelling, whether maybe based on the concept of halacha kedivrei hamekel be'eruv, although we said that in that case we would have expected him to phrase it that way. And on the other hand, here we're saying, here also Rabbi Yehuda is the one being mekel, but so it could be based on that. It could be just because in each individual case, Rav looked at the various opinions and concluded which one is the most logically compelling, whatever it is. So we would say Rav doesn't hold that there were any general rules at all. It's a case-by-case basis. Rabbi Yechanan would hold that there are general rules. Rabbi Yechanan could still agree that maybe there are exceptions, but he would say there are general rules, yeah.
But that's a problem.
Why would that be a problem?
It's a problem because then if we don't have Rav's opinion, there's no rubbing to prove it.
We have Rav's opinion.
No, I understand that. No, I understand that. But I'm saying if we say that Rav does not hold by those rules, who holds by those rules? We don't have
Rabbi Yechanan. So that's fine. Rabbi Yechanan is one person. Rav is also one person, but fine. Rabbi Yechanan is still Rabbi Yechanan. He's still one of the greatest of the Amoraim. The point is, in other words, okay, so we would say that there's a machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yechanan. Then we would have to, if we end up saying, so far, this is where we're up to in the Gemara, so far we would say that Rabbi Yechanan would hold of these rules. Again, we're asking like this. Rabbi Meshashia had said the rules don't exist b'chlal. In other words, in effect, Rabbi Meshashi is saying, I don't believe that Rabbi Yechanan actually said these rules. We had Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi said them in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. In effect, Rabbi Meshashi is saying, I don't believe they come from Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi made them up himself, or he, not made them up, maybe is a harsh word to use, whatever. He based them on, he inferred them maybe from something that Rabbi Yechanan said, like we had the other day, Miklala or Refeders from Miklala. And therefore, so he's inferring that Rabbi Yochanan would hold that way. Not necessarily. So we went through all these various cases. Now we're up to, we're saying, okay, we don't have a proof so far whether Rabbi Yochanan would agree that these rules exist. We know that Rav holds they don't. Okay, so then you would get into the question of who do we pass them like, Rabbi Yochanan or Rav. Generally, actually, when we have a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, usually we pass them like Rabbi Yochanan. But that's another matter. The point is that we still haven't proved Rabbi Meshashia's point that the rules don't exist at all. All we've proved so far is that Rav doesn't agree with these rules. That still doesn't mean Rav Yochanan wouldn't agree with them. So now we have to see if we can find a place where Rav Yochanan himself says something different than those rules. So that's what we're going to get into now.
So my question was, is one Tana able to make rules for everybody else?
First of all, Rav Yochanan and Rav are not Tanoim, they're Amiroim. And no, they're not able to make rules. No, they're not able to make rules for everyone else, but they're able to make rules that they're able to make rules that subsequent generations of Amoraim will follow. So if we said that both Rav Yochanan and Rav agree with these rules, then that would be a very strong reason to say we have to accept these rules. Now that we're saying that Rav and Rav Yochanan themselves disagree, so first of all, we're not done the discussion yet. We have to see whether Rav Yochanan himself agrees with these rules. If we find that Rav Yochanan himself doesn't agree with these rules, then the rules fall apart, and then we have no reason to follow them at all. If we say that Rav doesn't hold of the rules and Rav Yochanan does hold of them, okay, then we have to figure out so who do we follow? Do we follow Rav Yochanan's rules, or do we follow Rav and say there are no rules? But that's not, we still have to discuss that. So let's go. Yeah. Okay. So, Ela Mehod D'Tnan. So we're going to try to bring a proof from a case in Masech the Yevamos. D'Tnan. Ha-Yevama le-Tachlitz le-Tsiabim. A Yevama is not allowed to do Chalitza or Yibum ad she-yir la-Shloisha Chadoshim until 3 months have passed after her husband passed away. And the reason is because she might be pregnant. And if she's pregnant, if it turns out that she has a baby, then she's not allowed to marry. Then she's not allowed to marry the Yavam anyway. It would actually be an Isser Koris, and Chalitza would be unnecessary. Actually, Rashi refers to something that the Gemara says over there. That the Gemara asks on the face of it, she could do Chalitza. And Manafshech, if it comes out that she has a baby and it's a Ben Kayoma, it's a baby, it's a viable baby, then the Chalitza didn't mean anything anyway. What good does it? It's like if I do chalitza with a random woman, it doesn't make any difference. And if it turns out that the baby is not viable, then the chalitza was valid to be matter her. Rashi says the Rashi brings from the Gemara over there. Then in principle, in theory, you could do that. The Chachamim don't want you to do that. Because since a chalitza is also to marry a kohen, we don't want that there's going to be confusion over here. There's going to be a chalitza. It turns out the chalitza was unnecessary anyway, because she ended up having a ben kayama. People aren't going to be aware of that. They're going to see later on she marries a kohen, and they're going to think that a chalitza is able to marry a kohen. So for that reason, we tell her wait with the chalitza until 3 months. Yibum, obviously, she can't do within 3 months, because you don't know what's going to happen. But chalitza, in theory, she could do, but because of that, you don't. Anyway, it continues the mission. V'chein shar kol anoshim, the same thing in general with any other women who are able to remarry. Lo yinosu v'lo yisarasu, they're not allowed to get married with nisurin, the second stage of marriage, or erusin, the first stage, kedushin, ad sheyulan shloisha chadoshim, until 3 months have passed since the end of their first marriage, and that applies echad b'sulis v'echad b'olis. That applies whether the woman is a b'sula or whether she's already had relations. Even though if she's a b'sula, on the face of it, she can't possibly be pregnant. Nevertheless, loy plug, the Chachamim didn't make distinctions in this xeris. Echad amonis v'echad grushis, it applies whether she's widowed or divorced from her first marriage. Echad arusis v'echad nesuis, it applies whether she was only an arusa or even if she was in the sua. Now, usually, by the way, if she's in a sua, she would already be a b'ula. So why do we have to make the distinction between, we said echad besulas ve'echad ba'ulas and echad arusas ve'echad nasuas, but it means, in other words, that it means in all cases. Rashi explains it means whether they got married as a besula to their first husband or whether she got married as a ba'ula to her first husband. Either way, even though it was only erusin that she had with him, and then he passed away or divorced her. Nevertheless, now we would say she was a besula when kedushin was done. She's still a besula now because they only had erusin. You would think maybe the gzeder doesn't apply. No, it still applies. So nevertheless, they still have to wait 3 months. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it's not such a blanket thing. If she was previously married, she doesn't have to wait 3 months for the erusin. She can do the erusin right away because that there's no problem. Only when it comes to nisuin are they going to have relations, and there's the possibility that then. So in the case, by the way, with the yavama, with the yavama versus a regular case, there's a slightly different reason why you can't. In the case of the yavama, you can't do yibum within the 3 months, because if it turns out that she has a baby, then it turns out that it was a vs erva. In the case of the other woman, in the case of other women, it's more a matter of that then if she becomes pregnant from her second husband, you're not going to know whether it's a baby from the first or the second one. might be Ben Shiva Larishin, it might be Ben Tisha Larishin, or Ben Shiva Lachman. It might be a 9-month baby from the first husband, or a 7-month baby from the second husband, and you're not going to know, and it's going to cause problems as far as Yuchsin and all kinds of other problems. What?
Right.
You won't know whose father he is, you won't know who his father is, et cetera. You have all kinds of cases, you have all kinds of points that it makes in Yevamos about what the dinim are if she was over and married, and you have all kinds of dinim of what you do about these mix-ups, yeah. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Huda Omer Nesuas Yisarsu, Rabbi Huda says no, if she was in Nesua previously, there's no problem of her having Erosin now, because Erosin is not going to lead to them having relations, so therefore that can happen within the 3 months. Va'arusas Yinosu, if she was only an arusa to her first husband, she's allowed to get married to the second husband within 3 months. Same idea, if she was only an arusa from the first marriage, she's obviously not pregnant from him, because they can't have had relations until Nisuin. Chutz me'arusa shev Yehuda, with the exception of an arusa in the territory of Yehuda, in Eretz Yisrael, because he's very familiar with her. In Yehuda, the Gemara mentioned, the Mishnah, the Gemara mentioned, in Ksubas, they used to allow the Aros and Arusa to be in Yichud together, unlike in other places. So therefore, there was the possibility that they had relations during that time, and therefore there's the possibility that she's pregnant. But in other places, not. No, it means eventually they had the chuppah, but nevertheless, you still had the minig in those places in Yehuda, was that they would allow them to be together in Yichud before that. Okay. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a kolam noshim yisarsu. Rabbi Yossi is even more maple than Rabbi Yehuda, that any women, any of these cases of these women are able to do erusin during the 3 months. Chutz min almana, except for an almana, can't do within the first month mifnehi ibul, because she's in avelus. So during avelus of 1 month for her husband, then she for 1 month. But the point is, in other words, after that 1 month, then she could. Okay. Anyway, so that's the Mishnah. The Amrinan. Now we say on that in the Gemara over there in Yevamos, Rabbi Lozer loy olabe medrash. One time, Rabbi Lozer had not come to the Bis Medrash. Ashkechel Rab Asi to have a koyim. He found Rab Asi standing someplace outside the Bis Medrash, I guess. Amalei my omer bevei medrash. So Rabbi Lozer asked him, what were they talking about in the Bis Medrash? Amalei hochi omer Rabbi Yechon halacha ki Rabbi Yosi. He tells him, Rab Asi tells him, Rabbi Yechon had said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. That in general she's allowed to do erusin right away, and it's with the exception of an almana who has to wait 1 month, and it's only nisuin that's a problem during the 3 months. We haven't yet gotten to where we see that this has to do with all rules over here. First, we have to figure out, first of all, Miklaldi Chida Poligale, does that imply that there's only a Das Yochid arguing on Rabbi Yossi? When we have the first part of the Mishnah, when it says that the Chen Shau Kol Anoshim, that they're not allowed to do Eros, that Shau Kol Anoshim, Lo Yinosu V'lo Yisarsu, it sounds like that's only a Das Yochid. If it was a Das Rabim, how could we be Paskin like Rabbi Yossi? Now, okay, we had an opinion before that Halacha Rabbi Yosi Mechave Rav. That was Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Zirka said that. The rule we had from Rabbi Yechanan is only when you have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi Halacha Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yosi Halacha Rabbi Yosi. We never said that Rabbi Yechanan would say the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi against the Rabbim. So does that mean the first part of the Mishnah, even though it was a Stam Mishnah, was only a Das Yachid? So Moses says, Ain. As a matter of fact, yes, Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa to that effect. He was more cases. Suppose that the woman was always very eager and very, very commonly going back to her father's house. So she doesn't regularly live at home. Most of the time she lives in her father's house. So therefore she's not regularly with her husband to have relations. Or for the last 3 months before she got divorced or widowed, she and her husband were not separated necessarily, but the point is they were angry at each other and therefore they weren't having relations. Or her husband was old or sick, so they weren't able to have relations. Or she was sick, akara, or she's infertile. Zkeno, or she's old. Ktana, she's a child. Or an ilonis. Or any other case where she's not capable of having children. Or her husband was in jail the last 3 months. So again, in all these cases, there was no possibility that she became pregnant in the last 3 months. Or if she miscarries after her husband dies. So let's say she was pregnant, and then after her husband passed away, she miscarried. So obviously now she's not pregnant from him anymore. nevertheless, kolon tzrichim lahamtin gimel chadashim, they still have to wait 3 months because divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says she still has to wait 3 months because loy plug, when the chachamim made such a rule, they made it across the board. Reb Yosi matir la'oris for the nasa miyan. And Reb Yosi allows right away. So we see that in the Mishnah that we quoted before, when we said v'chein shau kol anoshim, even though we didn't have a name of a tana attached to it, we see from this braisa that that is specifically according to Reb Meir. So therefore, you see that yes, it's a machlokas Reb Meir against Reb Yosi. Now the question would be that again, according to the rules we said before, Reb Meir over Reb Yosi, halacha Reb Yosi. So the question is lomali. So why would you have to say the halacha is like Reb Yosi? But ha'amit Reb Meir over Reb Yosi, halacha Reb Yosi. Didn't we say before, according to the rules, the halacha is like Reb Yosi? So Reb Yochanan wouldn't have had to explicitly say the halacha is like Reb Yosi. The fact that he did shows that he doesn't hold of these rules. However, the Gemara says, my kusha, still, why do you consider that to be a problem? Why does that force you to say that Rabbi Yechanan doesn't hold of the rules at all? Maybe Rabbi Yechanan had to say it in this particular case in order to tell us not to go like Rabbi Nachman in the name of Shmuel. He says, yes, it's true that in general we don't say the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. Usually we say Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yehuda, halacha of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yosi, halacha of Rabbi Yosi, etc. But when Reb Meir is saying something regarding a gzera of the Chachamim, then usually the halacha is like Reb Meir, says Shmuel. In this case, this whole thing is a gzera of the Chachamim, because you might have, she's going to become pregnant, and then you're not going to know whether it was from the first husband or the second husband. So if we said halacha could Reb Meir be gzeroisav, even where he's machmir in a gzera of the chachamim, so that would force us to say the halacha is like Reb Meir over here. Comes Reb Yochanan and tells us, no, the usual rules still apply. We still say the halacha is like Reb Yosi over here. So that doesn't show he doesn't hold of the rules. It shows he wanted to tell us, in this case, don't think because it's b'gzeroisav that maybe the halacha should be like Reb Meir. So still no proof that Reb Yochanan does not hold of these rules. Ela mehod tanya. No, rather we're going to try to prove it from the following braisa. Now we know from Masecht Avodah Zarah that the Chachamim restricted what kind of business that you're allowed to do with a goyim on their chagas or a few days before their chagas, because we're concerned that they're going to go and thank the Avodah Zarah for the good business deal that they got. Nowadays we don't do much of that for a variety of reasons. One of them is we live among the goyim and we really have no choice but to do business with them. And also most of them are not that fanatical about their religion anyway. And okay, anyway, the point is, the Tanya, we learned in a braisa, hoichim liyirid shel nachrim, you're allowed to go to a fair of goyim, which takes place on a chaga of the goyim. The loichim they had behemah of avodim or shvachas, you're allowed to buy from them at this fair animals or avodim or male or female avodim and shvachas, batim sodes ekramim, you're allowed to buy from them houses or fields or vineyards. The coast of a malavak, all of this, the reason why we're allowing it is. There's a couple of reasons. One of them being Rashi and other Rishonim discuss over here different ideas over here and another Zara. One idea is because you're bringing these things into Kedusha. You buy an Eved or a Shivcha, for example, now they become, you mal and tovel them, l'shem avdus, and now they're chayev in some mitzvahs. The same thing, the behemah is not going to work on Shabbos, the house is going to be used for the house, the field, whatever, they're now going to be chayev, the field is now going to be chayev in mitzvahs. If it's in Eretz Yisrael, on top of that, you have the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, etc. So you're allowed to do that, even though we're not concerned about the business that the goy may go and thank his getchka for it. Right. And the Mishnah continues, the Braisa continues, because of Malabar Kois Shalahan, you're also allowed to have a document of sale written and certified in their courts, in the Goyish courts, even though now usually that would be you're not allowed to do business with the Goyish courts. It's shown that you're giving them chashivos. You're showing how important they are. And Befrat, they're likely, again, we're talking, this is on a day of a Yerid of Avodah Zarah, so they're very likely to go, they might go and thank their Getchka, look how important the Jews consider us, they're doing their business with us, because it happens to be, this Yerid is on a day that's dedicated to Avodah Zarah. Yeah, yeah. So, nevertheless, it's Mutam of Neshu Kamatsu Miyodon, because, in effect, that's needed in order to save it from them. Because what happens, you don't write a bill of sale. Later on, the goy is likely to start an irur. He's likely to start legal proceedings. You didn't buy that legally. You stole it or whatever. So you need a piece of paper to be able to show that you actually bought it legally. And continues the Braisa. If he was a Kohen, and usually a Kohen shouldn't be leaving Eretz Yisrael, because outside Eretz Yisrael, as we've learned previously in the Masechta, is Tomei Midrabanan from Tumas Mes, so usually a Kohen shouldn't go out there, but since it's only a Gzeira Drabanan, so therefore they were mad to it for this case, if he was a Kohen. Well, I mean, yeah, on a ruchniistic level, it's Tommy, because as the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, it's Molly Klippus. But the official reason why Eretz Amim is Tommy is because the goyim bury willy nilly wherever they want, and therefore there might be Mason over there. He gets Tommy b'mago b'masa. There's machlokas whether he's matame b'oil. But whatever, the Chacham made a gzera that Eretz Amim is matame. So usually a Kohen should not be going out to Eretz Amim. But in this case, we allow it. Matame b'chutz la'aretz lodun al-arimon. He's allowed to go to chutz la'aretz and become tame in order to go to a court case or in order to start a court case against them on these things. And continues the Braisa, Ochshem Shematame b'chutz la'aretz, just like the Kohen is allowed to go to chutz la'aretz for this purpose, even though he's becoming Tomei Dirabanan, Kach Matame b'Beis HaKvaris, the same way he's allowed to go to a Beis HaKvaris for this purpose. And Moses interjects, one second, Beis HaKvaris, what do you mean, how could he go to a Beis HaKvaris? Tumah D'Oraisa, that's already, you're talking about Tumah D'Oraisa. It's one thing, you can allow him a Tumah Dirabanan for the sake of this thing, Matzul Miyadim. You can't allow him to be Oiran and Isur D'Oraisa. So no, what we're talking about is, we're saying he's allowed to go into a Beis HaPras. Let's say it so happens that the Goyish court is by a Beis HaPras, or in a Beis HaPras, or whatever, and the only way to get there is to go through that. A Beis HaPras, we learned previously, is a place, is a field, where there was a grave in there, and then somebody plowed up the field, and now the Chachamim are concerned that pieces of bone may be scattered all over the place. But again, it's only Tomei Midrabanan. On a D'oraisa level, we don't assume the grave was touched at all. Usually the plow doesn't go that deep. So therefore, on a D'oraisa level, it's not Tomei at all. And therefore, again, it's only Tomei D'rabanan. The Chum allowed the Kohen to go in there for this purpose. And continues the Braisa. Umetame lisa isha v'lumad Torah. Here are other cases where Kohen is allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Eretz Amin. He's allowed to do that in order to get married or in order to learn Torah. So now comes the machlokas. Amr of Yehuda Emasai, this man she'ain moitzel lomud, this that we're saying that he has a heter to leave for chutz la'aretz in order to learn Torah, is only if he doesn't have anybody available in Eretz Yisrael to learn from. Aval moitzel lomud, but if he has somebody you could be learning from in Eretz Yisrael, lo yitame, then he's not allowed to go to chutz la'aretz and become tame, he has to stay in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi says, no, af is man she'moitzel lomud nami yitame, no, even if he's able to find a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael to teach him, he's still allowed to go to chutz la'aretz to a different Rebbe. Because a person is not zoicha to learn from everybody. Sometimes you have a person, a melamed, then a talmud is like a shidduch. Sometimes you have it. It's a good shidduch and sometimes not. Rashi actually explains the vote is, sometimes you have a rab who has the facts very clearly, mishnasei stura b'fiv, he has it very clearly arranged in speech, he's able to teach in a few words like the way the Mishnah is, and we learn a lot from it. So that kind of Rebbe is a better Rebbe than the kind who has to ploiter on and on, and you and you can't get to the point easily. So, but Makom Shalibei Chofetz is something else. That's as far as learning the area of Torah that most appeals to you. But anyway, the point is, and for Amr Rabbi Yosi, Maisa be Yosef Hakoyin Shaholachet to Rabbi Letzaidon Lumud Torah. Rabbi Yosi said, I'll give you an example. Yosef Hakoyin one time went to his Rebbe in Sidon, whatever, which is outside Eretz Yisrael, Lumud Torah, to learn Torah. So you see that even though there were Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael who Yosef HaKohen could have learned from, he still went to Chutz La'aretz. So that's what Rabbi Yossi says. That proves my point that sometimes the better Rabbeim are in Chutz La'aretz. Anyway, the point is, the Amr Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'Rab Yosi. Here Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. Now again, we have Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Yosi. Lomali, why would Rabbi Yochanan have to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi? For Amr Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yosi halacha k'Rab Yosi. You said we said in general according to Rabbi Yochanan's rules from Mevav Amud Beis that the halacha would be like Rabbi Yosi. So you shouldn't need to say so again. Doesn't that show, like Rabbi Meshavshia says, that these rules don't exist? Amar Abaya. Abaya says, no, not necessarily. Itzrich. No, because we could still say there's a special reason why Rabbi Yochanan had to mention it in this case. Sachra d'hamina. Otherwise, if Rabbi Yochanan had not explained it in this particular case, you would have thought, Hani mili b'masnissin. When do we apply these rules? Maybe only in a Mishnah. Because Mishnayos, Rashi explains, the Davki, in a Mishnah, when we have that it says that that this Tana says this and that Tana says that, we can take that to the bank. We know for a fact that it's that way and it wasn't flipped around by accident. As opposed to Alva B'Braisa, but a B'Braisa, sometimes accidentally the opinions are flipped around. We had earlier in our Masechta examples of that, where we said April, we have to flip it around. Amaloi, so maybe we wouldn't say that. Maybe the B'Braisa is not reliable enough to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, because maybe the opinion that we're quoting from Rabbi Yossi about being able, the Koyan being able to go to Chutzlar, maybe it's really from Rabbi Yehuda and vice versa. Amaloi, you would think not. Kamash Malon, maybe therefore Rabbi Yechanan has to tell us in this case that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, in other words, the Braisa as we have it is correct, and therefore we follow the usual rule that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So the bottom line is we don't have a reason to say that what Mesharshia is saying, that these rules don't exist, that we don't have a basis for that. Ela hachikama. No, what we can say though is that after all, we don't have to completely reject what Rav Mesharshia said either. Rav Mesharshia is just pointing out, Hani Koli lav divrakol ninu. You should know that these rules about Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi and Rav Meir and so forth are not universally agreed to. The Rav lost by Hani Koli, because we already established Chanamar Aleph that Rav doesn't agree with these rules. So you should know, Rav Mesharshia wants us to know. Don't just say, okay, Rav Meir, Rav Yossi, Alokha Rav Yossi, for example, and that's it, that you never have to look at anything else. You should be aware Rav disagrees with that. And in fact, as we discussed yesterday, the Rosh talks about, many other Rishonim talk about, that not always do we apply these rules so consistently. There are we do apply them a lot of times, but there are a lot of exceptions to them. Among others, if we find, for example, first of all, Amiroyim can paskin against them, and we can follow an Amoda, when an Amoda paskins against them, we can follow that Amoda. We can also say, for example, when we said Halacha Kedivra Ameko Be'erov, for example, we said that also there's a number of caveats and things to that. Does it apply to everything of Erovin? Does it apply to Mechitzis, for example? Does it apply, again, where we find an Amorta paskening differently, et cetera, et cetera. So it turns out that the rules are rules, but we don't apply them 100% of the time. Because after all, we do see that Rav Bechlal argues and says that these rules don't even exist, and that you have to just pasken on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes you end up having a machlokas among the Rishonim and a machlokas that goes down until nowadays, which of them it's like. For example, in Shabbos, we had the whole discussion about malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. When we have, a person is doing a malacha on Shabbos, where it's not being done for a constructive purpose, it's being done only because he would have rather not have to be in that situation, or according to Tosfos, he's not doing it for the same purpose in the Mishkan. Do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, or do we paskin like Rabbi Shimon? The Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda in that he's chayiv. Everybody else paskins like Rabbi Shimon, that he's potter. So there you have an example. Even if we just use these rules, as a blanket statement, we would say, of course, the halacha has to be like Rabbi Yehuda. But we see that most of the Rishonim paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So that's that with that discussion, and now we're going to get back to we were talking about in the Gemara after the Mishnah about the question of whether Hefte Hefker Koinen Shvisa. Do we say that an object that was Hefker at the beginning of Yom Tov is Koinen Shvisa and has a Tchum of its own, and therefore you can't carry it more than 2,000 Amos from that spot, even if your Tchum itself happens to be larger or different or whatever? Or do we say it wasn't Koinen Shvisa and the first person who picks it up, he's the one who creates the tchum for it, and it becomes his tchum? So now we're going to talk about a similar thing when it comes to something that belongs to a goy. Armor of your... No. So that's a different matter. We have that a person can be Kona Shvisa for himself where he sees it at a distance. But we're talking about an object of Hefka over here. So, for example, we talked about a couple of days ago, we talked about a case, for example, rain fell on Yom Tov, or rain fell before Yom Tov, we said. So we said that at the beginning of Yom Tov, it was in a certain place. You're not allowed to carry that water more than 2,000 amas from that spot, even if that spot, let's say, happens to be at the edge of your own tchum, and you yourself could have walked almost 4,000 amas in the other direction, but you can't take that water more than 2,000 amas from that spot. Again, it's mostly on Yom Tov, because on Shabbos, it's less relevant, because on Shabbos, you can't carry outside Rosh Hashanah Yachid anyway, and if it's Rosh Hashanah Yachid, then the whole matter of Tchumen doesn't apply as much. Anyway, okay. So, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Chetzei Nachri Ein Koin in Shvisa. Objects that belong to a goy at the beginning of Yom Tov are not koin shvisa. So therefore, that would mean that if the goy brought it from outside the tchum, you would be able to, and brought them into the city, then you would be able to carry them in any place where you yourself are able to walk on Yom Tov. So the question is, well, man. Now, we had in our Mishnah, we had the Machlokes Reb Yechon ben Nuri and the Chachamim about the case where the person was asleep at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov. Was he Kona Shvisa and therefore he has a Tum of 2,000 Amos, or was he not Kona Shvisa and he has a Tum of only 4 Amos? And we said that one way of understanding the Machlokes is it's based on this question of Chetzei Hefker. Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, we said, would say that Chefzei Hefker Koinin Shvisa, and therefore the person is no worse than a Chefetz of Hefker, and therefore he has a Tchum of 2,000. Macham would say Chefzei Hefker Ein Koinin Shvisa. When we say Chefzei Nachri Ein Koinin Shvisa, which opinion is Shmuel talking according to? Ilema le Rabbanan, is he talking according to the Rabbanan, who say that Chefzei Hefker are not Koinin Shvisa? Well then, Pshita, obviously an object belonging to a Goy is not going to be Koinin Shvisa either. Hashta Chefzei Hefker, the Leslahu Bailim, Ein we can make a kavachomer. The Chefzei Hefker, they have no owner at that point when Shabbos, when Yom Tov begins, and still we say they're not Koinish Visa. Chefzei Hanochri, the Islahu Bailim, where the objects of the Goy, which have a Bailim, and the owner doesn't have a concept of a Tchum, because he doesn't have, he's a Goy, how much more so? It shouldn't be Koinish Visa. So there would be no chidush in saying that according to the Chachamim. Evidently, it must be that Shmuel is talking according to Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri. So he wants us to know as follows. You know that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri says that Chefzei Hefker Koin and Shvisa, and they have a tchum of 2,000. You can't take them outside that tchum. Hani mili Chefzei Hefker deles lo bailim. So that only applies if at the beginning of Yom Tov they were Hefker. They had no owner, so therefore they're limited to 2,000 amos from where they were at the beginning of Yom Tov. But he wants us to know, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri would agree that an object belonging to a goy which has an owner who is not chayiv in the dinim of tchumen, loy, that the object wouldn't have a tchum of its own. When the goy brings it into the city, then at that point, and a yid gets it, at that point it becomes, at that point it has a tchum, and the tchum is the same as the tchum of the yid who owns it now. Okay. If we understand it that way, fine. But the Gemara says, Nasi. Then in that case, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Reb Shim ben Elazar, Hashoyo Klim in Anochri B'Yomtev. If a person borrows a Keli from a Goy on Yomtev, so there you have a case. The Goy owned the Keli. Then now we're talking about, Rashi says, let's say we're talking that the Goy lives in the same city. So there's no problem that it was brought from outside the Tchum. But the question is, now does it have your Tchum or not? So if you borrow a keli from a goy on Yom Tov, v'chein amashaloi l'nachri klima erev Yom Tov, v'achziru lebi Yom Tov, or a similar case, you lent the goy a keli before Yom Tov, so it was koina shvisa by the goy, again within the tchum of the city, and then the goy returned it on Yom Tov, so now it's back in your rishus. And also, v'akelim v'al'oitzvus sh'shavus v'seichat chum, also kelim or storage of fruit that started Yom Tov within the tchum. Rashi explains that we're talking about Rashi explains that we're talking about whether they have bailim or whether they're hefker. Tosfos has a bit of discussion about that and says that not necessarily. Maybe we're talking about only where it's hefker. Anyway. So all of those things have 2,000 amos in every direction because each of them was koinish shvisa in a certain spot at the beginning of Yom Tov, and therefore that becomes their tchum for the rest of Yom Tov. So in other words, in the scenario where let's say for example you lent the goy something before Yom Tov and he returned it on Yom Tov. So let's say for example before Yom Tov he might have had it he had it within the tchum of the city. Let's say fine, but he had it let's say 1,000 amos outside the city. So now, when he returns it to you on Yom Tov, you're only going to be able to carry it 1,000 amos in the other direction outside the city. You're not going to be able to carry it the full 2,000 amos. It's not going to be Kiragli Abaylim because it was Kornish Visa by the Goy 1,000 amos away from the city to 1,000 amos west of the city at the beginning of Yom Tov, and therefore you can't carry it more than 1,000 amos east of the city when he returns it to you. And the Braisa continues, now, on the other hand, if the Goy brought him Peres from outside the Tchum, then he's not allowed to move them from their place. Because again, they came from outside the Tchum. It's like we had at the beginning of the Perek, that a person goes outside the Tchum, then he only has 4 Amos. These Peres are limited to 4 Amos, so you can't move them. So here we're not talking about where the Goy brought it specifically for the Yid. We're talking about the Goy brought it for his own purposes. And you, let's say, bought it from him. Yeah, we're going to have something about that further down in the Gemara. Right. When the Gemara uses the expression, doesn't mean for him, means that he brought them for the Yid. Because you're right, then there would be a problem with the Yid using it. It just means the Goy brought it. The word loy is kind of extra. Anyway. Okay, so again, so this Braisa is telling us that Cheftzei Nochri are Koinen Shvisa. So let's figure out then. If you tell me that Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri holds that Cheftzei Hefker or that Cheftzei Nochri are Koinen Shvisa, Homani Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri, then okay, we would say this Braisa goes like Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri, and we would say, therefore, again, so this object was in the possession of the Goy at the beginning of Yom Tov. It has a Tchum of its own, and therefore we have all the rules that we laid out in the Braisa, how far you're allowed to move it, or are you allowed to move it at all if it was brought from outside the Tchum. But if you say that, again, we had Shmuel's statement, Shmuel didn't specify whether that was according to Rabbi Yechon and Manuri or according to the Chachamim. We said it must be according to Rabbi Yechon and Manuri, because otherwise, according to the Chachamim, there's no Chiddush. But if we say it's according to Rabbi Yechon and Manuri, so Rabbi Yechon and Manuri and the Chachamim would both hold that the objects that were in the possession of a Goy at the beginning of Yom Tov are not Kornish Visa. Homani, then who would this braisa go like? Loy Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri v'loy Rabbanan. Then you don't have any Tana that goes according to. So that means you have to say that Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri says Cheftzei Nochri Koinen Shvisa, which would mean that when Shmuel said Cheftzei Nochri Ein Koinen Shvisa, he wasn't talking according to Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri, he was talking according to the Chachamim. But, so the Gemara says, you're right. La'olam kasavar Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri Cheftzei Nochri Koinen Shvisa. You're right. Rabbi Yechon Ben Nuri does hold that they are Koinen Shvisa. Therefore, this object, which again, for example, was, let's say, 1,000 amos west of the city at the beginning of Yom Tov, its tchum stops 1,000 amos east of the city, and you can't carry it beyond that on Yom Tov. Shmuel de Omer Rabbanan. Shmuel's statement is specifically according to the Rabbanan. You were saying that according to the Chum, wouldn't it be posher? If even Cheftzei Hefker are Koinen Shvisa, why would we think that Cheftzei Noch, if even Cheftzei Hefker are not Koinen Shvisa, according to the Chachamim, where they don't even have Bailim, why would you think that Cheftzei Nochri, where the Goy is Bechlan at Chayiv and Tchumen, why would we think that they're Koinen Shvisa and Shmuel has to tell us not? No, nevertheless, we would say Mao de Tema, Gzeira Bailim the Nochri, Otto Bailim the Israel. You might have thought, without Shmuel's statement, maybe the Chachamim would say that we make a Zera, if it was in the possession of a Goy at the beginning of Yom Tov, we're going to be Goyzer that it has a Tchum, because that might be confused with the case where it was in the possession of a Yid at the beginning of Yom Tov. And if it's in the possession of a Yid at the beginning of Yom Tov, it definitely has a Tchum. It goes according to his Tchum. Kamash Malon. Therefore, Shmuel might be telling us that that's not the case and we don't make such a Zera. So it's not so pushit, in other words. Okay, so all that is one opinion. And now, Rav Chiya Ba'oven, in the name of Rav Yechanan, argues with Shmuel. He says, Cheftzei Nochri Koinen Shvisa. As a matter of fact, if they were in the possession of a Goy at the beginning of Yom Tov, they are Koinen Shvisa. Gzera, Bailim de Nochri, Otto Bailim de Yisrael. We do make just that Gzera, that we're concerned that if it belongs to a Goy, people might confuse it with the case where it belongs to or is in the possession of a Yid, and then definitely it has a Tchum. So therefore, we are going to restrict it. And that means that, yes, if it was brought from outside the Tchum on Yom Tov, then you have a problem, then you can't move it on Yom Tov because it was Koinen Shvisa more than 2,000 amos away from the city. Okay, so the Gemara gives an example over here. Hanu Dichri, there were these rams, the Osulim of Arachta, which were brought to Mevarachta. Mevarachta is the name of a city in Babel. And these rams were brought to the city on Yom Tov by Goyim. Now, again, it would be like we had the other day with the case of the turnips on Daf Mem, that the Goyim didn't bring them specifically in order to sell them to Jews, because then we said it would, in fact, be also to buy them. We're talking about they brought them for their own purposes, or they brought them to sell to fellow Goyim, or whatever. But meanwhile, right. Or anyway, whatever. The point is, yeah. Yeah, the deer that they brought for their ishkol. So yeah, whatever. Yeah. So Sharol who Rava looked named Mechuzah leMizbin Minayu. So Rava allowed the people of Mechuzah, which I guess was near Mevarachta, to buy from them. Now, obviously, buying you can't give them money on Yom Tov, but whatever you buy on credit, and you obviously it has to be where the goy trusts you, etc., etc. Amalei Ravina leRava. So here you asked before, where's Ravina? Here's where we have Ravina in Hargemara. Amalei Ravina leRava. So Ravina asks Rava, my daiter, what are you thinking to say that it should be mutter to buy them? The Amr of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Chesse Nachri Ein Koinen Shvisa, because Shmuel had said that they're not Koinen Shvisa, so only when they're brought to the city and sold to a Yid, only then do they have a Tchum, and the Tchum would be the Tchum of the Yid who bought them. The problem is, we have a general rule that when Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan argue, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yechanan. But Amr of Chiyah ba'Avin, Amr of Yechanan, Cheftzei Nachri Kohen and Shvisa, Gzeira Bailam the Nachri, Alta Bailam the Israel. We just said that Chiyah ba'Avin had said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that we do make this Gzeira and we don't allow you to move it, because even though technically it's true, it might not have been Kohen and Shvisa because it was in the possession of a Goy, but we make a Gzeira because you might confuse it with the case where it was in the possession of a Yid, etc. So how are you allowing people to buy these and take them home? Hada Amar Rava. So Rava said, you know what, you're right. However, it's true. The people of Mechuzah, which is the next town over, can't buy it, even though it is within their tchum. However, Lizdabnu Levne Mevarachta. However, the people of Mevarachta itself are allowed to buy these rams and keep them in the city. Dekulam Mevarachta Lididhu Kedalat Amas Damya. The entire city of Mevarachta was surrounded by a wall. So therefore, so it's considered like four amas, like we said at the beginning of the parak, that when you have, we said that if you had the case over there where Yid was taken out of the city on Shabbos by Goyim and placed into an enclosed area, a deer or sahar, we said the whole area counts as four amas. Same thing over here. These rams count like that also. Now they have a new tomb of four amas, but that four amas encompasses the entire city because it's surrounded by a wall. So therefore, the people of Mevarachta can buy these rams as long as they keep them in the city. Yeah, they can't transport them to Mechuzah because that would be too far. That's outside the Tchum. That's out on Yom Tov, obviously. But on Yom Tov itself, they're allowed to buy them and keep them in Mevarachta and shecht them, etc. Because that the whole city is counted like four amas. Okay, Tosfos mentions over here that besides that it was surrounded by a wall, it may need other details as well. It needs to be, it has to be hukaf ladira. It was that the walls were put up before that. The walls were put up specifically in order to build a city inside, not that they were put up. We had a case in the second parak, for example, where walls were put up just in order to preserve the pits, the stuff that was in pits for animals to eat over there, etc. Fine, all those rules, but nevertheless, when those rules are in effect, then the whole city counts as four amas. Okay.